much for joining us here on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale. And as always, I'm not in here alone. The king of the IPAs, Mr. Hazy Cat himself, Kyle Filson.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, I'm here in beautiful Skeleton Studios. This is Halloween week, I guess. Halloween was on Monday. Technically, this is Wednesday, but... you know, it's the week of Halloween. I hope everybody out there had a good time. I know me and Luke and my wife did. We did some trick-or-treating. He did good like normal. We have a special neighborhood that we go to every year, and these kids clean up.
Full-size candy bars.
These are the ones where, this is one of those neighborhoods where, like, every house is participating, and every house goes all out with decorations. These people are into it. And we started in that neighborhood years ago because a friend of ours lived in that neighborhood. They've since moved, but we just continue to go to that neighborhood because it's so good. I mean, literally in 45 minutes, you got so much candy, it's in a, you got a year's worth.
That's like a good fishing spot. You just keep going back to once a year. This is where you go and get your sack full.
Keep going back. I saw some really interesting costumes out there. My favorite costume that I saw, though, was my niece, Bella, she dressed as Dolly Parton. That was really unique, and it's odd for such a small child to be infatuated with Dolly Parton. But yeah, it was a really good outfit, pretty cool. But not just Halloween was fun. The live show. I know lots of people have been messaging me, how did it go? I've had several people message me, are you going to be releasing a recording of it? And the answer is no. It was a live show. If you didn't come, you don't get to see it. Now, the reality is we had thought about recording it, but we also didn't know that there'd be like a DJ there and music and a lot of people. And so we didn't even attempt it because the audio would be so bad. Like, what's the point of putting it out when it just sounds terrible?
Yeah, it would be bad.
Or, you know, when we're recording here at Skeleton Studios, it's just me and you in a soundproof room.
Yeah.
So, sadly, if you weren't there,
sorry,
you don't get to hear that audio. But, you know, it's basically us introducing ourselves to people at the brewery that I've never heard of the show. And then everybody else, the majority of the people were already big fans. And we got to meet a lot of cool people, took lots of selfies.
It was awesome.
Little Fizzy, he was loving it, man. He was in his limelight. He was signing autographs. There was people coming up and wanting to take pictures. And he was signing and giving away stickers and stuff like that. So
James and his brother, James, first of all, big ups to him. He came up and got on the mic with us and told us a creepy, crazy story.
That's right. Yeah.
I mean, actually willing to get up and share. Yeah, we had some good times. Steve was there with his wife. Stacy was there. John, who else we get? Justice, Cassidy. We're in everybody. Caesar, Jessica. Yeah.
No, all of them. There was a lot of people.
Tanner, where did you go? I was talking to Tanner. Turn around. Tanner's gone. Well, I was going to talk. We ran into so many people.
I can't believe
if we didn't get a chance to talk to you, we're sorry.
Very sorry.
Because that was madness. And I'm not going to lie. I was 2.5 beers in and I was almost gone.
Those suckers.
That's how lightweight I am, folks. That's right. I drank 2.5 craft beers that are like, I don't know what one of them was like. I didn't drink the 11. I drank like an 8% and like a couple of fives. I was done. I'm like, whew, I'm glad my wife was taking me home.
Yeah, I had a DD as well. I was having a good old time. I had about 5 or 7, I think. But they were delicious. They were going down smooth.
You're more of a man than I am.
Well, I didn't feel like such a man the morning when I woke up. But it was a fantastic time, and I'm shocked that people even come and want to listen to our nonsense. And the distance people drove to come see us. There was people that drove, you know, 5 hours.
Steve came up from Austin. James came up from College Station.
I'm like, bro, I appreciate it. You don't have to do that.
Yeah. The rain.
It was raining hard, which probably deterred more people, because I know
it almost deterred me. I almost didn't go.
Told me they were coming, messaged me privately later and said, look, it was raining too hard, we didn't come.
Nick didn't make it. Charlie got sick. We had Lyle.
Lyle was there.
And he brought the guys some Rue Morgue, and he got to up and talked. And he fought through the weather, too, to get over there and hang out with us, because I know he had to come a pretty good distance from where he was.
Friends Jason and Dave, I think, was their names. They were pretty cool.
The Rue Morgue guys, yeah.
Yeah, very good.
And they were going to see the Misfits. That's why they came down. They came in from Toronto. So they'd come down to watch all that. So we had a great time. And thank you all again for everybody. Sincerely, thanks for everybody that came out and had the fun with us.
Absolutely.
All that stuff.
I learned two things. First, that people that, you know, when you see the analytics and the numbers, that it's for real. There are really people out there that are listening to you. Because, you know, as far as we know, it's just numbers, right? It doesn't mean anything till you physically meet a person.
And two, don't be drinking pints of craft beer.
No, you can do that. And the second thing I learned is that we're going to do a live show again.
Okay.
Now, I can't promise it'll be next Halloween. It may be sooner than that. I don't know, but we definitely need to do it again.
Well, we had a lot of fun in the summer.
Well, we thought about doing it with several authors and stuff, like putting together a real thing.
Yeah.
It's just going to take some works and draw up some contracts.
We'll
and
see what happens.
Like that, right?
Yeah.
Very, very cool. But moving on, let's get into the news. Speaking of news, we were recently on an episode of Ducks Unlimited podcast. If you want to go back, I think it came out Friday, October 28th. And we had a good time on there. But because of us being on there, we were introduced to a lot of people that were unfamiliar with the show. So we started getting emails from other hunters that had experiences of their own that liked it. And, of course, we got some emails from hunters that think we're full of hot air. And they didn't like it. But that's okay, too.
That's fine.
But check this out. This comes from a new fan.
You're right also. I'm full of hot air, too.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Absolutely. I don't argue with them. It's like, hey, man, you got your thoughts. Good on you.
That's like your opinion, man.
It's, what are you, the dude? But we got a guy over there. He emailed the show, and he's loving it. His name is Jacob. Check this out. He says, I live in southeastern Oklahoma, and this happened during a public land duck hunt nearly 7 years ago. Now, I've been an avid outdoorsman from a young age, and this is unlike anything I've ever seen before. I was hunting solo. None of my buddies were able to join. I had hunted this spot countless times, and I knew the area very well. It was loaded with ducks, so I decided going alone was acceptable. I arrived at the slough plenty early, peppered the pond with decoys, brushed in my blind, and I sat down roughly 30 minutes before shooting light. Now this pond, it stretches 80 yards wide and 200 yards long at normal water level, and is located in a densely wooded creek bottom. The side I was on, sitting and faced the dense oak trees, which came nearly all the way to the water. My rechargeable headlamp had been slowly dimming throughout the morning, so I knew that the battery was losing juice. As I sat in the still, calm darkness, I heard faint footsteps coming from the other side of the pond. They sounded very faint. Noises that would be produced by a doe or perhaps a stealthy raccoon. I flashed my light across the water and I saw a pair of eyes light up. The height of the eyes was around 5 feet, about a foot taller than the reeds that surrounded the pond. My assumption was that it was a deer. No other wildlife in the area could possibly be that tall. I kept dimming my light beam and I fixed upon it. And it remained confident in my assumption that it was a deer. That is until I saw the eyes move. Now, I've seen deer in the headlights a million times. I know how they move, and I know about their careful, meticulous maneuvers and mannerisms. This set of eyes moved to the left, but it did so in a very unique and eerie way. It never diverted its eyes away from me. They were entirely fixed across the pond, never once looking to watch its step or over its shoulder. They felt like they were just on me. Not above me, not to the side of me, but directly at the source of the light beam. When the eyes moved, they did so in a rhythmic swaying motion. It would sway to the left, sometimes pausing for several seconds, sometimes several minutes, and sway again. By swaying, I mean its head would move to a vertical position, then back to a horizontal position, finally coming back to a resting position a couple of feet from its last position. I'll also note that it never moved in a jarring manner. An unbroken stare and sway with no abrupt movements. I probably watched this thing for 15 minutes. What frightened me most is that it was slowly rounding the pond in my direction. And my light, like I mentioned, was starting to run out. After this thing had made it 30 or so yards, my light sputtered out. I sat extremely still, 12 gauge in hand, and prayed earnestly for the sun to please come up. I was horrified, and I kept my eyes on its last known position. Ducks soon came, and I didn't shoot. I was too scared to move for a few minutes. I waited and decided to watch the thing to move once I shot. I unloaded on some cupping ducks and saw nothing fleeing from the scene. No movement. I continued to watch for movement throughout the rest of the morning and never once saw or heard anything on the bank or in the woods. This thing had vanished without a trace. I looked for tracks for an hour to no avail. It's not a crazy story. It's nothing grandiose. Looking back, what I remember from that morning was an overwhelming sense of being alone and an impending sense of dread as the set of eyes slowly moved around the pond, getting closer and closer to me. And in the 10 minutes between my light going out and the first ducks lighting in, I was petrified in my makeshift blind, trying to keep my breathing to a minimal and listening intently for any crunch of the leaves or twigs. However, once my light had gone out, I never heard or saw anything. I've talked about this encounter with many of my outdoor buddies, and nobody could offer an explanation. Many suggested a mountain lion, but I've watched videos and footage of them move, and that wasn't it. Have you guys ever heard of anything like this? Any rational explanations? I'd love to hear your input from the professionals. Big fan of what you guys do. Thanks, Jacob Lott. Thank you, Jacob.
Wowzers. Thanks so much for sharing that one.
I appreciate it.
Now I'm terrified to go. Yeah.
I don't know what you saw, but I will tell you that your sighting falls right in line with several other people's encounters while out hunting and stuff. It's very similar. Like, people have this, and all of a sudden they feel alone. It gets really quiet. They feel this impending dread or something ominous. And whatever, they see something they can't describe exactly. They can't see a form, but they see these eyes. And it looks like it's approaching or flanking them, perhaps. And then, just like a classic horror movie, nothing ever happens.
It's just there, feeding off of your fear.
Yeah. So, but, and you know, you mentioned you looked for footprints and couldn't find them. Now you're obviously a hunter, so you know or familiar with tracking and tracks and things like that. This is another thing that, you know, it messes with me. Say it was a Bigfoot. I'm not saying that's what it was, but say it was. Is it physical? Like, maybe that's why sometimes they don't leave footprints.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it was a ghost. I mean, obviously we played in the last episode, Chris talking about the Arkansian in the mist.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Where it was like a ghost walking out there. We were hunting. It could be lots of different things. I don't know.
Well,
it,
that you brought up the no tracks. You know, you and I was talking the other night about the Navajo Rangers on the new Unsolved Mysteries on Netflix.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I watched it. Very
and
good.
And in one part, one of them is talking about tracking a Bigfoot, finding the tracks, and then in the middle of nowhere, it's just there's nothing around. There's no trees, and you know, it's all in that, and the tracks just stop. It's just like in a desert, and it just quits. Like something picked
right,
it
following
straight up.
A trail, and yeah. Then it just nothing. Like it stepped into a portal. It was picked up from above.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's one of those deals. It's, look, I know it sounds hokey, right?
Oh, I say it all the time.
We get it. We know how funky it sounds. We get it. I mean, like we said, people hate on it all the time, but there's no other explanation.
Not for a lot of people.
Not for a lot of encounters, right? There's no other explanation. So, yeah, I have no idea what it was you saw, but it could have been, again, one of those things that is gaining something off of your anxiety, off of your fear, off of something like that. Because like Kyle pointed out, there's tons of them where nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
It's just there for the fear. In fact, I got something here that I found. I got dropped on this. Ron dropped this off in the emails, and I want to talk about this. It says, and I don't know, but I think you're going to enjoy it. It says, it was a little after midnight when I fell asleep. I was dreaming I was at the cemetery, and it was dark. All I wanted to do was leave, and something or someone was just not letting me go. The more I ran, the longer the cemetery got, until something caught my eye. So this is a dream they're having. It says, I stopped and saw people digging up a grave. My heart was pounding fast, and I didn't know what to do. And when they saw me, they gave me this weird look. So I woke up from my dream. My heart was beating, and I couldn't really breathe. I opened my eyes, and there in front of me was a dead man in an old suit with dirt on his shoulders looking at me. His hair was wavy and gray with a little black in it and combed over to the side. I wasn't afraid of him. I turned around to my other side and fell right back asleep, still knowing he was there. I can feel the presence of him and his reaction of me knowing I wasn't scared of him. So in the morning when I woke up good, I looked to see if he was still there, and he wasn't. I got up from bed and walked by where the dead man was standing, and there was piles of dirt. No, I'm kidding, folks. I'm kidding. There was no dirt. But it says that I felt cold. So cold in that spot where that person, that specter was standing,
yeah,
that this person got goosebumps. It says, all day, the only thing on my mind was a dead man in an old brown suit. Was it a dream? Was it real? I'm not sure. But I know for a fact it wasn't a full, like, dream. I really saw a man in an old brown suit with the details of dirt on his shoulders. Now, why he was there, I have no idea because I don't know him. This is the second night, and I have to sleep in here wondering if I'm going to see him again. All I know is if I have a dream of me being at the cemetery at night, probably the dead man will be there watching me again while I sleep. I don't know what I'm going to do. So, yeah. How wild is that? You see something in the dream. Now, I've never had this happen, right? To where, like we've talked about, some people believe that sleep paralysis and all that is you're just really asleep. You're not really paralyzed. You're dreaming that you're awake.
Right.
Right. That you're not really awake. It's all a dream. I guess seeing this apparition, it could have all been just part of the dream. You dreamed you woke up. You dreamed you saw it. You dreamed you turned back over. The whole time you was all asleep.
It's possible.
But it doesn't explain the cold spot. It doesn't explain that and that unnervy, realistic feeling, too. Seems to be a thing that gets to them.
I've had some experience with sleep paralysis, probably three or four times in my entire life, like where I knew I was dreaming.
Yeah.
But then I like tried to roll over and I couldn't. And like the first time it was kind of terrifying. But then like the second time I was like feeling, trying to make myself roll over and I couldn't. And you could like slowly get some movement. And then, when you do that, then you'd wake up. So I was like conscious that I was dreaming.
That's wild.
But I didn't have anything scary. Like, I didn't see aliens. I didn't have any shadow beings.
You were just kind of stuck there. Couldn't move.
I didn't feel like something was watching me. No, I just felt like, oh, you're dreaming. You know, roll over. Wake up.
Right.
But that was my only experiences. Now, I have, in the past, woken up in the middle of the night and seen small figures in my room, but that just turned out to be the brood. One of the twins true. Or something. Like, Dad, wake up. You're like, Jesus Christ.
This is true.
I just got through watching Fire in the Sky. Do not come in my room.
Staying at the foot of the bed. Psst. Yeah. Like, what? Throw something in here. Let me know you're coming. Just turn on the lights. Just
throw something. Throw a right hook. Like, I'm surprised I never hit one of them. It's like, you know, you wake up, there's something
they're
small.
Right in your face.
Yeah.
Just right in your face, breathing on you. Hey, Dad, I threw up. Remember yeah, those right? times they wake you up like, why'd you tell me?
Oh, man. Yeah, I don't miss those days.
No.
Speaking of days and old days, let's go back to some ancient history, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Let's take a break. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about some crazy stuff from our past. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives. We're back with Expanded Perspectives. Thought we'd do something a little bit different today instead of just reporting on creepy sightings all the time. I think about, I'm a big fan. I think about history, alternative history, how much we really know. And as more time goes by, I find out more and more stuff, right? What I'm talking about is what I was taught in school isn't ironclad, right? I didn't realize till I was much older that like that's, this is based on a theory or this is what they thought happened. And we know that a lot of that stuff did not happen. Like when I was in school, Christopher Columbus was the first guy to find North America, right? And I thought up until that time, it was just the First Nations or Native American people that came over a land bridge in Siberia. That was it. You know, comes to find out there was lots of people here from Egyptians to Phoenicians to Vikings to Japanese, Chinese, like all types of people were visiting the North America and stuff. I had no idea that stuff happened. I had no idea about the Younger Dryas, all that stuff. I had no idea that Atlantis could have been actually a real thing. There was lots of stories, and we got lots of time to cover those in future episodes. But one of my favorite theories is the one about the aquatic ape. Cam, are you familiar with the aquatic ape theory?
Yes. Yes, I am.
It's very interesting. And what it has to deal with is everybody is taught that Homo sapiens, right? We've evolved from apes. You know, that's what happened. We are the descendants of that. Somewhere the tree broke, and you know, you got the Denisovans, you got Australopithecus, you got all these different branches. Homo sapiens being us. But they're claiming that that's just a theory. It's not necessarily ironclad. And I know a lot of people are going to send me emails saying, well, it's been proven that this happened. But I'm telling you, I've heard lots of stuff that was proven. It turned out later it wasn't. The aquatic ape theory says that we didn't evolve from apes, but that we came from the sea and that we might be closer in alignment with like dolphins, whales, you know, sea-going mammals than we are with primates. And this is one of my favorite theories from our past. There are 11 human characteristics that make us very different from traditional apes. Now, these would include hairlessness, our breath control, the ability for us to hold our breath, to dive deep under the water, our diet, our diving reflex. You can take a baby and just stick them underwater. They instantly know to hold their breath. You don't have to teach it to them. Our body fat, our larynx, our nose, webbing between our fingers and our toes, the sebaceous glands, our ability to even swim, and of course, bipedalism. Now, some conventional evolutionary theorists believe that body hair was discarded, not when early humans entered the water, but more probably as a means of losing parasites. While in your mother's womb, all humans developed webbed fingers, webbed toes, and we actually developed gills. Now, by the final months of pregnancy, these gills, well, they close up and vanish in virtually all infants. Although there are reports of some very rare cases of children born with clearly visible throat gill slits from time to time. I've seen pictures. It's crazy. Now, a baby does not breathe for oxygen when it's in the womb. So there is no use for gills, which in any case are non-functioning because everything the embryo and fetus needs is received through the mother's placenta. So if these gills don't work and they're not necessary, why do babies have them? Why the gills? Why would we develop gills that we don't need unless it's a leftover remnant of our past? Now, only since 2004 have scientists known that the parathyroid gland evolved from these gills when our ancestors made the transition from an aquatic to a terrestrial environment. This is the theory anyways. Also, hair arranged along the human form, especially down the back, forms the same pattern water makes as it streams around our bodies. And these tracks all meet diagonally towards the midline. I don't know if you know this, Cam. While entering the sixth month in a mother's womb, human fetuses strangely and without any discernible cause develop lanugo. Now, I'm not talking about Roberto Luongo, the fantastic goaltender who played for the Panthers and the Canucks. No, I'm talking about lanugo. Now, if you're not familiar, lanugo is a super fine, super soft hair that covers the body and limbs of a fetus or a newborn. Now, this bodysuit of fine hairs runs in tracks precisely following water as it would move over the body or while swimming. This pattern is found in no other primate, just Homo sapiens, but it is common in aquatic animals. So, why do we have this feature? If we evolved from terrestrial apes, why would we have this? There's also certain factors of the aquatic ape theory that are really apparent concerning women's biology and evolution. Now, flat out, women are just better in the water than men. There are these Japanese pearl divers known as the Ama. Now, they're not all women, but they're like 98% women. And they are famous for their ability to free dive. Have you ever heard of these pearl divers?
Yes, I actually have. I've actually watched a few videos of them. Well, because you know how scared it makes me of them diving in, just like sponge diving and all that. So I watch it because it terrifies me.
Right. So they can dive without scuba gear. They can dive without any type of air tanks or breathing device. No flippers, nothing. 75 feet beneath the surface in the waters off southeastern Honshu. They hold their breath. Like one single breath, they can do this, you know, and they collect stuff from lobsters to clams, scallops, all types of things on the bottom of the ocean floor. And this is what they've been doing since the beginning of time, right? These people have been living off the sea, off the bottom and stuff. And this is carried on today. And because of these women doing this their entire life, their lung capacity is just insane. Your body, if you're in the water all the time, actually will physically morph and change to help you out. So it's pretty cool. Like I said, most of these ama are female, and women, they have a better breath control than men do. I didn't even know that. Women are also more buoyant because they have a higher percentage of fat, which floats, as well as a lower percentage of negative buoyancy, bone mass, and muscle. Now, their fat distribution toward the periphery of their bodies allows their legs to float higher. This is like subcutaneous fat. Now, this makes aquatic animals buoyant in the water. Basically, all of us have a layer of blubber beneath our skin, but not any other primates do. So why is that? Well,
again, I have a large layer.
Yeah. But you know what I mean? Like, why do we have it, but other primates do, if we evolved from primates? A woman's streamlined hydrodynamic benefits permit her to exert less energy while swimming at higher speeds. For example, Susie Maroney, she swam from Mexico to Cuba, the longest distance ever achieved without flippers in the open sea. She covered 122 miles in 38 hours, 33 minutes on June 1st, 1998. The Australian's record has never been beaten. Again, on August 6th, 1926, Gertrude Ederle was the first woman to swim the English Channel, swimming 35% faster than the fastest male competitor before. The year before, she swam 21 miles from the tip of Manhattan to Sandy Hook, New Jersey. It took her only 7 hours, 11 minutes, and 30 seconds, bettering the records held previously by men. Now, Ederle's English Channel crossing stood for nearly a quarter of a century until it was broken in 1950, again by another woman, Florence Chadwick. The fact is, female fat not only provides better buoyancy, but improved insulation from the cold. Now, humans, all of us, store subcutaneous fat for lots of different reasons, but mostly for warmth, the conservation of energy, buoyancy, characteristics that aquatic animals like dolphins, whales, and penguins have, not like other apes. Apes don't have this. Athletic swimmers typically experience something called swimmer's fat. I didn't even know about this. That is, they gain excess fat despite normal or low caloric intake of non-fatty nutrition, even though they engage in prolonged, stressful exercise. According to Sports Science magazine, elite swimmers typically undertake 4,000 to 20,000 meters per day while training. And when they're doing this, they're burning thousands of calories. However, the typical body fat levels of these athletes are significantly higher than any runners or cyclists who expend similar, even smaller amounts of energy during their training. Now, the swimmer's fat humans accumulate when they spend more time beneath the surface is evidence, they say, of an ancestral aquatic phase. There's a famous researcher named Elaine Morgan, and she observed, if we regard man as a terrestrial mammal, he is, in this respect, as in others, somewhat freakish. But if we regard him as aquatic or ex-aquatic, he is simply conforming to type. Here's another interesting fact that only happens to us humans. A telltale remnant of our aquatic phase is the vellum, or the soft palate of the tissue in the back of the roof of our mouth that closes, allowing us to hold our breath. Now, this conscious control is typical of all marine mammals, but it's absent in terrestrials. An ape cannot submerge beneath the water's surface because it's unable to close the large nostrils of its broad nose. Neither can man, but our nose is proportionally longer and thinner for diving. Its flesh and cartilage roof deflect water from being forced into the sinuses during one of these dives. This is an arrangement not found in any other primate. Now, what about auditory exotosis? Cam, are you familiar with auditory exotosis?
I was going to ask, is this where you get like something regrows in your ear, like swimmer's ear, it grows back?
That's
if you
right.
spend too much time in there? Because I know that like swimmers have problems with this.
It's called surfer's ear, actually.
Yeah.
This is actually a bony swelling of the ear canal, well known to scientists and doctors. Now, this occurs exclusively as a direct result of long-term exposure, they say, to cold and often deep water. So much like those pearl divers we were talking about before. Commonly known as surfer's ear, Auditory exostosis is an abnormal bone growth within the ear canal that causes the bone surrounding the ear canal to develop these lumps of new bony growth that constricts the ear canal. Surfer's ear is a human condition that is shared only with other aquatic mammals, but no primates. So again, this is something that other aquatic mammals like seals and sea lions and stuff like that, they have this, but primates don't. So if you're diving deep all the time, you know, like that pressure you feel like when you get to the bottom of the pool, your body will actually start growing these bony stuff. So the pressure doesn't bother you as much.
Well, name me something else that the human being can do to where you alter that fast.
Right. It's like, it reminds me of feral pigs.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
There could be a farm pig, but once it's on the loose, man, it don't take no time to that thing becomes feral.
It's true.
So if you're diving deep all the time, I'm guessing your body starts morphing. I mean, this was an argument I had all the time when Jacob was pitching. He was within a year or two, like he had really gotten good at pitching. And I remember every coach he played for would always say, man, he's built like a pitcher. Look at him. Mm-hmm. He's super tall, super lanky. He's got that whip, perfect for throwing a slider or a curveball. And my question always was he naturally born that way? And that's why he's a good pitcher? Or was it because he was pitching all the time, his body morphed into a pitcher's body?
Because he'd focused mainly on,
What I'm saying? Like wrestlers look different. Do they look different because they're wrestling all the time? Or were they just born that way and then naturally they just,
I think through happenstance,
found wrestling?
I think there's body types that are inherently better at every sport. But I don't know, to play off of that, let's just say that, you know, if we're going off as fast as this happens, and I'm talking out of my butt, I'm not sure how fast, you know, surfer's ear happens.
I don't either.
Undoubtedly, it's not like it takes 10 years before you get surfer's ear. Like, you may end up getting it doing some free diving in a year or so. Like, I don't know. But I would think that there's no other thing that makes you change like that. Because let's use pitching, for instance. It's not like pitchers in the major, one guy's arm is a foot longer because he's morphed over the last 3 years to where he's the ultimate pitcher, where his left arm is 6 feet long and his right arm's normal, right?
That's, yeah, I know what you mean.
It doesn't happen like that. So why does it happen like this with this whole surfer's ear thing, unless we were designed initially to be in the water more than we are now?
That's the theory, is that we evolved from the water. Like,
yeah. I come from the water.
And maybe that would explain like mermaids. Maybe just like Australopithecus split off and, you know, Homo sapiens came down the road. Maybe mermaids split off and that's where we come from. And some of the sightings of mermaids are real.
Here's one for you. Maybe we are a direct descendant of the alien race that we've been seeing coming and going from the ocean. We've just broken away. We've crawled out of the water. And as they were down there, they advanced or whatever, and probably not. They probably made us, but who knows, man?
Who knows? Check this out. Tears come naturally to man.
I don't shed those.
But no other primate, even chimpanzees, freshwater crocodiles cannot shed tears, but saltwater crocodiles do.
I make an onion cry.
Darwin himself learned that marine iguanas in the Galapagos Islands also shed tears, but landlocked lizards cannot.
Have you seen those iguanas, the videos of them shedding tears like that? Dude, it's weird.
Right? In other words, the shedding of tears is an attribute of an aquatic animal living in a saline environment, and it's not found among terrestrials. Shedding tears is a vehicle to vent excess salt, thereby maintaining the proper balance of minerals in the body. Terrestrial animals and freshwater aquatic animals have no need for this, as they're not ingesting more salt than necessary. Humans, we all cry. They're salty tears. Is this somehow something left over?
Not all of us.
From our ancestors. Now, according to other scientists, the soles of our feet feature 72,000 nerve endings, providing us with a high sensitivity, unneeded and detrimental to existence on the African plains, but very useful for beachcombers.
When you can feel it with your feet underwater.
Feeling about for morsels of food just beneath the sand. Also to facilitate swimming. Our big toe is joined to the others, making our feet more flipper-like, unlike an ape's foot, where the big toe of which is separate from the others. That's how they grab on trees and stuff.
Yeah.
But if we evolved from them, how come our feet are more like flippers?
This is true. I've also heard that along this theory is that when your hands and feet prune, it's actually so you get better grip.
Oh, maybe.
That's what it's for. You know how it prunes up like that? Well, you think about it. Next time you're in the pool and just grab something and squeeze it, you get much better grip when your hands are pruned up.
Yeah.
Holding on to things in the water.
That's interesting.
Dude, it's strange.
It's strange
because a lot of it lines up a little too good.
One more thing before we move on. They also point out that webs of skin between our toes, known medically as syndactyly, still occur among 7% of humans. That's approximately 1 in every 2,000 to 3,000 births.
Get webbed toes?
Webbed toes and webbed
feet. I wish I had those.
And these webs are evidence from our ancestors' adaptation to a watery environment. So perhaps we have more in kin with dolphins than apes.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a theory.
Well, what's
but an interesting one.
It's like we pointed out, is we have a lot of primate DNA, but we're water primate DNA. Like we've talked about with those crazy monkeys in the hot springs. Like maybe that's us in a few hundred thousand years, right? I mean, it's weird, but
maybe some water type aquatic humanoid mated with a terrestrial hominid. And that's why we share some DNA with apes as well as share features from saltwater.
Well, like you were pointing out, when we were kids in school, we weren't taught that they were all these different branches of hominids.
I don't think they knew it then.
They didn't. They had no idea. And they were still set in stone that this is the way it was. And then as it's come through and made proof to where they can't deny, then it's added to more of it. So just like that is... what is it to think crazy of when they've already added all this extra stuff that we didn't even know
existed? I think there probably were some scientists when we were going through, like, you know, in universities and stuff. But you're talking about small town in Texas. An eighth grade teacher in Parker County is not going to know about all these crazy.
Well, it was like we've discussed with Fingerprints of the Gods. Mm-hmm. Never really knew about all that till I was already out of school when I started reading it, when I'd found it and all that. I'd already graduated.
Yeah. I wasn't. And so, Zachariah Sitchin and all his stuff. Yeah.
Like you didn't really know about all of this. So it was going on while we were coming up, but without knowing it. It's one of those things. Like I said, I can't wait to see what we know in another 100 years. That we might find out about things. So is this one of your favorite theories to cover like that?
The aquatic ape theory is one of my favorite, about our ancestral past.
Because it just sticks with you, don't it? What is that?
It's so different. I mean, like I said, my whole life I've always heard that we are descendants of apes, right? Because they move like us. They look kind of like us. They're very intelligent. Some of them as smart as us, you know. So that's what it's to have something that's completely goes against all that to me is very interesting.
But
I find all kinds of stuff from ancient history interesting because you're taught a certain thing and then you find these artifacts and things that are found totally goes against what you were taught.
Well, like you and I've discussed the other day, we were talking again about the Kensington Runestone.
Yeah.
And
perfect
talking
example.
About, we need to talk about that again because that's one of my favorite things too, right? Is all of this stuff as I'm scrolling through it, there's so many. Folks, there are so many. My favorite things are the old Viking runestones that are found in North America. That's some of my favorite stuff to talk about, much like the giants, which before we go any further, I was going to tell you, Brad, I found something here that was posted up last year. And now I don't know like the validity of this stuff, right? Like it's hard to nail down
well, sure.
when it comes to some other things, but allegedly they were doing some excavation. Some folks were doing an archaeological excavation in a cave in Thailand, the Khao Kop Nam cave.
What was that again?
Uh-huh. And they apparently unearthed a skeleton in there that they said was likely male, but they believe it was measured 5 to almost 6 meters in length and was buried next to the remains of a giant serpent is what the story says.
Wow. See?
So
I mean, most of the giants you find are from North America.
Yeah.
But every once in a while they find them other places.
So of course, you know, it may be a bunch of BS, right? We don't know, but it is one of those odd things. Like we've talked about liking the giants and all of this stuff. That makes me wonder, were they here when the Vikings came?
Right. I believe they were. I think there was red-haired race of them as well as others because you'll find up and down Appalachia all through there and the Adirondack Mountains and stuff, all up in there, there's these mounds. And when they go into some of these mounds, there's giants in those mounds. Mm-hmm. And in those mounds, not only are there giants, but there's normal-sized people too. Like you find these giants with normal-sized women. Right. You find them with copper, like they had an advanced use of copper.
Yes.
Some of them had weapons. Some of them had double rows of teeth. Right. Some of them even had horns.
Like that was not
like,
best.
Yeah. Not like a helmet with horns. Like they physically were growing horns out of their head.
Had horns coming out of their faux head.
There's a famous one that that was found buried in Pennsylvania, and it's wild. But up, I mean, not just a case of one or two. Like there's lots of cases of giants being found buried along normal sized women. And if you think about it, back in the day, if there was a dude that was 12 foot tall and jacked like The Rock, I mean, of course, that guy's going to be the king, right?
Oh, yeah.
That's why he's got the crown. That's why he's got the women.
It has to be. Yeah, he's the big boss man, right?
We're not talking
about. He's a 10, 12 foot warrior.
When we start talking about giants, ginormous ones like I've heard, that's where you start kind of losing me, like Game of Thrones style giants. I don't believe in like the stories of 30 footers and stuff like that. But, you know, 7 to 10 foot. That's a large person.
And well, there's been documented reports through Spanish travelers that have talked about seeing them themselves.
Some of them are considered cannibals.
Yes. And talking about being 10 or 12 foot tall.
Mm-hmm.
That is a wild idea to run across something like that, right?
It's very cool.
So I like to believe they were here. See, and the reason I bring that up is because I've been, you know, still watching a bunch of stuff in the history of the Vikings. And over the last few years, they've been finding a lot more about them in Denmark, where they've been doing a lot of excavations. And then they go to Iceland and they go, Reykjavik? And they go there and they've been studying them all there. And they know how it's kind of played out of when they finally got down to where they just... They weren't making a living off of whale or walrus ivory and stuff so much that they ended up kind of disbanding and traveling and was absorbed into other cultures. But that idea of the Vikings like that have always stuck with me when we've talked about coming to North America, coming to what was it Leif Erikson was looking for? Vinland, right? He's coming looking for Vinland. We already know that they've landed in Newfoundland. We know they've been up through there. Y'all all know as well as I do, if you're landed on one coast, what's to keep them from just sailing with the coast in sight and just making their way south?
That's absolutely what they did. That's they went all the way up the Mississippi. Yes, they found them all over.
They went all over. So the idea of all of that isn't, to me, it's not crazy outlandish that there may be a lot of, and when I say a lot, let's pull that in. Let's not say a lot. Let's just say there were plenty of artifacts that may have been left behind that we've never discovered. And then those that we have discovered, people think's BS.
Well, I would say that there's plenty of artifacts that have been discovered. There's countless amounts that probably have never been found.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a guy not too long ago that was some kind of sighting he was reporting that along the Brazos River. And he says he knows a spot on some rancher's land where there's Viking runes carved into the wall. These are, I mean, just like the Kensington Runestone. Like in a cave.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's on private land. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I can personally take you up there and show you.
Be like Huebner.
So how many, right, like in Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
So what the heck is a Viking doing in Oklahoma?
Yeah, what's he doing up there?
Because they traveled all over, folks.
Yeah, and like we've talked about, they'd found Roman coins. We've covered that of the stuff they found on the Mississippi. They talk about finding the metallurgy in there in those mounds with the giants and whatnot. There's a lot to this that sounds like BS, and, you know, some of it might be, of course. It has to be. But then there's stuff like we said, the Kensington Runestone or the Grave Creek Stone. That's another one of those. It's a carved in there stone. Or you start looking around again at the Bourne Stone that's up there in Massachusetts because they thought that the – I didn't realize how much of New England was taught for years and years that the Vikings discovered all of it, right? Like this was all Viking culture. Well, they like to say that there wasn't and whatnot because of a big movement, but I'm not so sure. I'm really not so sure. Knowing human, just how they would be, right? Like we've already talked about, if you're already an adventurer and that's what you are, then why aren't you adventuring on all this land?
I think you've left it and gone through it. That this is called the New World and stuff. That's a fallacy.
Yes.
Like there was people coming and going to every part of the globe this entire time.
I believe so.
And, you know, they found ships in Egypt, like where the Egyptians found these ships. And they can tell from the way that they were constructed that these were not built for like cruising around the Nile. These were built for ocean going. And
like the Phoenicians ships, like they're talking about large ocean vessels.
Absolutely. And there's hieroglyphics with corn on it. Well, corn is not native to Africa. Corn only comes from North and South America. So they know that there was some kind of trade, whether they were sailing there themselves or they were using Phoenicians or some other company. You know, they were contracting others to bring it back and forth, but they knew about corn. They were finding pharaohs with cocaine.
In the mummies, yeah.
Cocaine is from South America. Colombia. Well, they were getting that Colombian devil's dandruff long before yayo. Pablo Escobar was dealing it. Yeah, long ago.
Pharaoh Escobar.
How did they even know that, though? Like, how did they know in 2,500 years ago about cocaina?
Probably chewing it, because that's what the natives always did, was chew the leaves.
Yeah, maybe.
And that's probably the way the whole thing
I'm just
came
saying,
about.
I think there's a lot that we don't know, but well, we just like to pretend like we know, right?
Oh, yeah. The second episode that we ever did, I believe, was done over the copper mines. Or was that the first one? Maybe in the first episode we ever
did. I think that was the first one.
Over the copper mines.
Don't listen to it, folks. The audio is terrible. Awful.
We'll redo it. We'll take it down and do another one, and we'll tell the whole story again, do a better job. But that was what changed everything for me whenever we started really looking into that.
Yeah, I remember.
Is you start talking about the copper trades and the ingot trades and all of it done by the Phoenicians. And not only they found how pure that copper was that's up there in the copper mines in the Great Lakes, but that they found that exact copper in ingot form at the bottom of the ocean in a Phoenician shipwreck.
Yeah, they found
it. So we know that they were doing it.
They were like using it to make stuff in Turkey.
Yeah.
Smelting and stuff like that. And the fact that that was being mined 14,000 years ago, and we're not talking like one mine.
No.
Like it was a major thing.
Yeah.
And which also, I think that not just that they're mining all the way in Michigan and shipping it back and forth to the Middle East. How the hell did they figure out that there was copper there?
The Vikings.
I know, but how do you go about just walking around?
How do you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I couldn't tell you how to find copper today.
Well, it makes me think, too, like they talked about. You remember one of the big stories is they said, we don't know how long that mine's been used.
Yeah, a long time.
A long, long time. It's very easy to think that there could have easily been trade and booming cities and things that happened over here, you know, villages, let's say, of large size pre-Ice Age.
Yes, I think so. I think that's absolutely what happened.
I'm a firm believer that everything off the coast, you have to travel off to where the waters rose up and covered a lot of our history on the coastlines after the thawing of the last ice age.
Yeah, I think
I'm one of those guys.
The last ice age probably forced everybody to move off that spot. But
yeah,
previous to that ice age, there was people there already.
I think so. I really do. I think that I've never thought as the oceans, when I was younger I did, but as I've gotten older, the oceans seem to be more like a highway and less like a boundary, where mountains are more of a boundary even today than oceans when are.
Another thing I used to always think about is, why are there different oceans? Isn't there just the ocean?
There's only one ocean.
Right?
I mean, really,
the Pacific Ocean touches the Indian Ocean. It's the same.
Yeah, y'all can name it whatever you want. It's one large body of water. Let's quit playing.
It's the ocean.
It's the ocean.
How are there different oceans? I used to always think of that, and I would argue with my teachers when they were teaching geography.
I'm not surprised.
I don't get it. Like, the Arctic Ocean touches the other oceans. Like, how do you know when you're in the different one?
Yeah, you don't.
I mean, but say you take away latitude and longitude, say.
Yeah.
How would you know?
And like, when did we name them? That's what I need to look up. When were the oceans named?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Right? Because I need to cover some stuff. When I get back, we're going to cover some stuff on some old maps and whatnot, too.
That sounds good. Well, let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
That was fun to just kind of BS and talk about some of our favorite stuff that's got going on. Folks, yeah, I'm fixing to have to bounce. I'm going to have to head north. I'm going to be gone. I've got some other stuff. Kyle may have to drop a little intro for y'all next time solo.
That's okay.
I don't know. I may have to call you. We'll just have to see how it goes. If I can get any service where we're going to be up. But I surely should be able to run around up there in the cold. I'm going to bring some cold weather back for you.
I might get a little Fizzy to help me out.
Do it.
I might contact a friend or two of ours, fellow podcasters, see if they want to come on.
Get little Fizzy on.
Yeah, if he's available. He's
got
a busy
awesome.
Week. The other day, he told me, do not come in my room. I am busy making a video. And I was like, okay.
I got you. You're like 10-4.
And he has figured out, I mean, I don't know how this kid does it. He figured out some kind of software he's downloaded where he literally is use, like you use Premiere Pro, but he's using a cheap version. But he literally is taking videos off YouTube, capturing them, and then like editing and doing stuff like After Effects. Like he's learning how to do this all on his own.
That is crazy.
Like he's industrious. I'm telling you,
you're gonna have to get him some get him on the Premiere you got and let him start monkeying around with that.
Well, he knows how to work Photoshop better than I do. He does.
You've created a monster.
You know, but in all honesty, I'd rather him be doing that kind of stuff. You know, when the kids were little, they liked to play sports. Luke has no interest in it.
No.
And I'm okay with it.
He likes to be creative. What's funny is this is the way it's creative now, right? Like when we were creative, you had to, you know, physically paint and all that. You didn't have these things. So now you have extra, more creativity, more options for creativity.
Man. If I had the ability to have half the stuff Luke has as a kid, I would have been in heaven.
Yeah, but we did it all outside, so it doesn't really count.
Well, we did it outside because we didn't have cool stuff like that.
Cool stuff. Yeah. That is true. Look, I got to give a quick shout out to our buddy Lon at Phantoms and Monsters. Knowing that it was Halloween and knowing how much we enjoyed these things, he fired this off over here, and I've got to share this with y'all. It's a black-eyed kid story. I know how much you love it. Took place, listen to this, as a Pennsylvania man is driving to his job in Delaware along a long, winding farm road when he suddenly sees a boy dressed a little strange. Now, listen to this. This is what I'm going to tell you. It says it looks like he was dressed from the 50s. It says, I think I saw a black-eyed kid. So I went online after this happened to me, and the people have written stories about their experiences with meeting black-eyed children, and they'll say that they can't come in unless you invite them. And I didn't know that. That's like, you know, they always ask you in, so they're like vampires, we've discussed. Says they'll usually pretend to be lost or need to use your phone or the bathroom in order to come into your house or your car or whatever. And if you say no, then they can't come in. And secondly, nobody really has an explanation for what they are. Some people think they're demons. Some people think they're ghosts or alien, but nobody really knows. So yeah, I had heard of them before I had this experience, but I really don't have any answers even after having this. I live in Southeast Pennsylvania. I work in Delaware. And my ride to work is a very long, winding farm road. At one point, I make a right onto another farm road, and this road is a very, very tight space. It's two ways, so you can go one way in cars, and then, so this is pretty wild. What is a, it's two ways that you can go one way, all right? We can go the opposite way, but it's a very, very tight space, so a real small two-lane road. So when you're driving the car beside you that's coming the opposite way, says both of you have to slow down just to be safe, so it's kind of dangerous. And on each side of you are very tall grass hills. So if a cop was going to pull you over, I'm not really exactly sure where you'd pull off to. You'd have to ride down the road for a while before you could pull over. So now there's no shoulder, right? It's just a little tiny two-lane farm road. So I'm driving this road on a Saturday. I had to be at work at 3, and this was around 2:30. I'm on this road. It's a very tight space, and there's cars coming the opposite way, and I'm slowing down so that we can both pass safely. I look to my right, and there's a break in the hills. And in the grass hills, where there's an entrance to a farm, and I look over, and in that entrance is a little boy. Now, first of all, on Saturday, it's 40 degrees, and he's not dressed like it's 40 degrees. He did not have a coat, no hat, no scarf, no gloves, nothing. He had on a red and gray striped shirt, in jeans. The way he was dressed and the way he looked, he didn't look like he was from this time period. He looked like he was maybe from the 1950s. He was very pale and he was just staring. He was standing there on his bike. Well, he wasn't on his bike. It was more leaned up right beside him, and he was holding it, and he was stiff as a board. And at first, actually, I thought it was a statue or a little cutout. Anyway, he's standing there staring straight ahead like his eyes are just really big. He's staring right over at me, and they're black, completely black. And now I'm looking him right in the face. He's not that far from me, maybe only 50 feet away. And I'm looking right at him, and he's staring straight ahead, right through me, not moving. And at this point, I'm getting creeped out. And then my window started to fog up, but only my window. My windshield, my back windshield, the passenger seat, or the back seats, none of them fogged up, only mine. I'm going to stop telling that story. I've had that happen before.
Yeah?
Just one window.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, It may just be because you were leaned in closer looking out the window. So sure. Your temperature of your body, that could have easily been. Or maybe it's something nefarious. I do not know. It says, I really don't believe in this stuff. Like, I don't think about strange phenomena, so I don't read too much into it or whatever. So I know this sounds crazy, and I promise you, I'm not crazy. And this also isn't like I'm not trolling anybody and I'm not putting this out there for anything. I'm just telling everybody because I'm hoping someone has a logical explanation for what I saw because I don't believe in this stuff and I don't understand why this little boy was just out there. So I went to work and I told a few people what had happened and they were like, well, maybe it was a statue. Well, I have to take that road home. So by the time I leave work, it's about 12:30 a.m. and I'm driving on this road. This would be Sunday morning, and I'm driving pretty fast. Even though the speed limit's only 35, well, I'm making pretty quick time because I don't want to be on this road much longer. And I glance over very quickly, and the gate to where the entrance to the farm is, well, it's there, but it's not closed, and there's no little boy there. There's no statue, so it definitely wasn't a statue. But I don't have any explanation for what he was. This thing, this little boy, maybe he was real. Maybe he was just hanging out. Maybe I was just imagining it. Maybe he didn't ride his bike. But what was so odd was the definition, the so perfect stance. See, there was no place for him to ride the bike where he was standing. He would have had to walk down there just pushing the bike. So I don't know if he was leaving. So I Googled that road thinking that maybe he was a ghost and to see if a little boy had been killed there. And the only thing I got was a man who had been killed there. But it was a grown man. He'd been hit by a car. So I'm not sure what it was. Maybe it was dangerous. Maybe it was a pedestrian. Maybe it was a black-eyed kid on the road. I'm not sure. Thanks, LT.
Wow.
So it makes me wonder, like he said, was it simply overreaction? Would the little boy have the sunglasses on? But sure. At 50 feet, okay?
Mm-hmm.
15 yards, 18 yards, that's what we're talking about? Like right there. Right there.
Like the farthest I can shoot with my recurve accurately?
Max distance? Max distance, 20 yards. Yeah, so what was that? Like if you had seen it, like I said, he's talking about him being stiff and he's in perfect high def detail standing there like it's almost like it's fake, but not.
Yeah, you have to wonder, are people seeing visions? Is it maybe not even there? Are they just mistaking something? You know,
it's
for
weird,
what it is, but
at least there was no interaction. They just saw the black eyes and that was it. No crazy interaction.
No harm came to them.
Yeah. No harm.
Yeah. They didn't, you know, have a missing dog the next week or nothing terrible
time.
Like that. Yeah. And black eyed kids. That's a crazy topic. I remember first reading it because the first sighting ever took place in Abilene, Texas. And
I
remember that kind of freaked me out at the time. But
we've received tons.
We have.
That stuff is one of those things that. You kind of think it may have started out as an internet hoax or like a story written in creepypasta and all that. And then like everything else, it's gained legs. It's like the energy we've put into it has manifested it.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's
very
creepy.
Cool. Speaking of energy, you're going out of town. You're going on a hunt for 2 weeks?
Probably, yeah. Probably pretty close to 2 weeks.
And you're going to be going to Kansas and Colorado.
Yes, sir.
But you're not going to be hunting.
I'm going to be doing the filming like I filmed last year, yeah.
Yeah, very, very cool.
And it is going to be very, very cool because I've been looking at the weather and it's going to be a little colder than it was last time we were up there. So that'll be fun.
Yeah.
Well, that Kansas, y'all got some wind, man. Woo. Wowzers. I thought we had some wind. Y'all got some wind up there.
Yeah, that's going to be really, really cool. Well, I hope everybody out there had a good Halloween like we did. Cam, what do you got planned other than your hunting trip? Anything? Or is that just basically it?
That's it, man. I'm just making sure I'm double checking everything, right? Making sure I've got all my stuff, got everything squared away and all that so I don't forget anything here. But the good thing is, like, I'm sure I can make do if I didn't have it. But not being the one doing the hunting is a little bit easier. Like, you just kind of have to keep up with clothes and camera gear. That's about it, right? There's no pressure for me. I'm just there.
I think I'm going to start on some Christmas shopping. I feel like I want to get it done and out of the way super early this year.
Heck yeah, I'll send you my list when I get done with this.
Yeah, please do that. If you have a list of your own, you can email the show. Yeah.
What about you? You got nothing crazy coming up this weekend?
I've got nothing crazy. I mean, like, I was slammed with everything, with the live show coming up and everything like that. And, like, right now, I think I'm going to coast. I'm sure it won't last forever. Like I said, next week I'll be in studio by myself or with a special guest if we can get one lined up. But outside of that, nothing really that big. We got like one more 6 weeks till Christmas break.
Man.
And then, I mean, we might be heading up for a ski trip or a snowboard trip sometime in December or January. I don't know.
Oh, shucks.
But I know a lot of the ski resorts are already open.
Yeah.
So
Yeah.
You know, global warming, and then here it is, earliest opening ever for some resorts.
Cool here, and I'm digging the cool weather.
I'm digging it, too. Well, that's about all the time we have for this episode. If you have a story you'd like to share with me and Cam and the listeners, do not hesitate. You can email the show at expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. You can call the show 888-393-2783. If you want to help us out, you can always leave a review on wherever you listen to us. Also, you can subscribe to the channel on YouTube. We're always trying to keep that thing growing. Mm-hmm. I know it's the same episodes that you hear on the podcast, but if you want to help us out, just get over there and hit subscribe. It doesn't cost you anything, and it helps out your blood.
Yeah, right.
Let's not forget about our sponsors. Microdose is available nationwide. You just go to microdose.com and use the promo code EXPANDED to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Also, just answer 4 easy questions to get your free personalized quote instantly from Gerber Life Insurance by visiting GerberLifeFamily.com. And if you want to support small businesses and brew the best cup of coffee you've ever made at home, it's time to try Trade Coffee. Like I said, go to drinktrade.com/expanded. You can check out the Expanded Perspectives collection. Right now, Trade is offering our listeners a total of $30 off your first order plus free shipping at drinktrade.com/expanded. That's about all the time we have for this episode, folks. Till next time, I'm Kyle. He's Cam.
Peace, y'all.